Jai Ma. So we, as we know, the period of Mahalya has started. That means the Navratri, and Mahalya is the day when the Pitru Paksh ends, and they call it as Devi Paksh. I like to call it as Matru Paksh starts. There is no term like that. They call it Devi Paksh, but it's very interesting. So Pitru Paksh is the ancestors. And then the period of Devi. So the closing of the Pitru Paksh is the beginning of the Devi festival. So it's very fascinating. Each of this is very beautiful from occult point of view, from every point of view. But right now we'll focus on the background of the story. So most of us are aware about this period of Navratri, which is celebrated as the festival of Devi, the Divine Mother, in a form as Durga. And her battle with the demons and defeating the demons. And very few people know that she doesn't, though it is shown as slay the demons, but she also says that in the next Manvantar, in the next Kalpa, Nishumba will come back as this and Manu will come back as this. So there is a lot of future prophecy in that. The demons don't, they are not destroyed. They are pushed back into their own place, which is the netherworlds. This is something which the mother remarks in one of her conversations. She says, she pushes them back. So this time, if you have to really, because you know, you can't destroy, you can destroy a form. What do you do with that energy which has immersed? So energy can be absorbed back and or dissolved. Now, if you absorb it back, then it has, because it's all interconnected. You can't just remove one element of creation without affecting all the others. So it can either be dissolved or converted. That's why this time she has asked Durga to stay quiet and let her do the work. This we have spoken about it in Hall of Harmony classes, that this time the mother deliberately asked Durga that you surrender to the Supreme. Don't intervene, because there is a greater game that she is playing. And she says she's formidable. For her, surrender to the Supreme means what? She is in her own self an absolute power. So she says, how do I do it? Then the mother shows her, and when she surrenders, she feels such a delight, because that's the origin. So this is the background. But then what is it that is sung during this period? So Mahalya, the chanting, it's very beautiful poetry. It's basically portions from a book called Devi Mahatma. So Devi Mahatma, also known as Markande Puran, because Markande is the rishi who brought to life, he is the author of this Puran called Markande Puran. And as we know, Rishi Markande comes also in the Mahabharata. He has Shurbindo and Rishi Markande at some places, they do intersect, in the sense, the most important epic of Sri Aurobindo, his most important work, Savitri, is based on the story which Rishi Markande narrates for the first time. It appears in Mahabharata when Yudhishthira asks him that, well, life is so terrible for me and my wife, my brothers, and has anybody met such a terrible fate? And Rishi Markande says, yes, somebody who met a more challenging fate and conquered it. And then he gives the story of Savitri. It's narrated there. And that story now Sri Aurobindo develops into. There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo on Rishi Markande. We'll read that also. It's very interesting. And Markande, as we know, is one of the immortals. And his story of, he is the author of the Puran. So the background. So because we need to know this, of course, the story of Shumbh Nishumbh, all that, Chandika, most Indians are aware of, and I think most of the people are aware of. But the background of the story, so as it goes, Rishi Markande is born to a very pious couple, and they pray to Lord Shiva, and Shiva grants them the boon. He says that, well, we want you as a child. Shiva says, okay. But then this child won't live long. It's a very interesting story. It says he'll live only for 16 years. And otherwise, if you want, I can. You can have a wicked child, a regular kind of guy. He will live long. See? So interesting. Why is it? Now that's the catch of the story. That if you embody a very tremendous consciousness which is coming from the very high planes, it's very difficult for it to adapt to earthly life, and the matter can't hold it for long and it'll disintegrate under the very pressure of holding that consciousness. So if you read what Mother writes about Savitri, she says one of the things in Savitri is the effort of the Divine Mother to adapt to the falsehood and the ways of earthly life. It's very difficult. See, at one place, for example, the mother says, I don't understand why human beings quarrel. If you ask human beings, they'll say, we don't know how to have peace and harmony. So, but this is what she says, because she has to adapt to this way of life which we are. Then only she can operate. Otherwise, there'll be total disconnect. So both Mother and Sri Aurobindo to take a human body. So it's very difficult. So Shiva says, you have these two choices. They say, that time we want you, obviously. So it also shows that, you know, it's not the number of years that one lives, or, you know, what your outer achievements are. What is important is what you are inwardly. So Shiva comes, sure enough, 16th year and 16th birthday, and the parents are looking very visibly anxious, and he asks his mother, what's wrong? It's my birthday, should be celebrating. She tells him all that. The boy is shown right from beginning. He has very beautiful, not only pious, but he's turned towards God, and he has all these tendencies. So when he says basically, you know, this is supposed to be your last year, so we are distressed. So he says, okay. So he starts praying to Lord Shiva. Because he's Ansh of Shiva. So what is for him is connecting to his source. So as the story goes, that on the fated day, Yama comes. And Yama wants to take him away. That time, what he does, most of us get frightened. We plead. To whom? To the fellow who has come to take you. But Markandeya does just the opposite. Instead of pleading to Yama, instead of, you know, trying out, he just clings to Shiva, who is there in the form of a lingam. So he clings to Shiva. So when Yama throws the noose includes Shiva, because, you know, he is clinging to Shiva. So as he tries to pull, Shiva appears, and Shiva says, how dare you? So he says, what can I do? This is time, I am Kal. And Shiva says, I am Kalantak. That's when Shiva gets the name of Kalantak, because he kills Yama, as the story goes. And all the gods then appear that this is going to create havoc. So he brings back Yama to life. So this story, of course, then he is released from the bonds of death. But release from bonds of death is not enough to secure immortality. See, this is something very interesting. There in the Isha Upanishad, that avidyancha amrityum tirtva vidyancha amritam ashnute. You are released from the bonds of death. Means now you can probably choose your moment. You are not subjected to, you know, the harsh, brute law of death. But it doesn't mean you become immortal. So Markandeya continues to do his tapasya, and as a result of his tapasya, he has a very long life. Lives through some manvantars. So manvantar, by the way, is each period of time ruled by one particular Manu. Manu is the, you know, the human original ancestor in the subtle world. For each age, there is a Manu. And each Manu represents the possibilities within which the human being will evolve. You can't go beyond it. Then the manvantar changes and a new kind of humanity comes, and it goes on for the next four cycles. So all that is a period of time. Sri Aurobindo describes all this in his record of yoga. So these are things which Sri Aurobindo confirms by his direct experience. He speaks of all the Manus. So all of them. So then at the end of some six manvantar, this is the seventh one. So that's when everything Indra tries, everybody tries to dissuade him, but he is steadfast in his tapasya. Then Lord Vishnu comes as Nara Narayan. This is also interesting. Why he comes as Nara Narayan? So it is that aspect which holds within itself the human. So Nara Narayan. And he says, grant whatever boon you want. Then he says, I want to understand your Maya. Because he is watching all this game going on. So he says, what is this game? I don't understand this play. I want to understand your Mahamaya. So he says, okay. He goes. And then, after some time, suddenly, in one of his meditation, he suddenly realizes that everything has vanished. So he opens his eyes and sees that there is a great flood. Nobody is there. Nothing. All life is gone. Destroyed. So he is wondering what has happened. So then he is looking for, he is the only fellow left with splashes of water all around. So he is wondering what has happened. Where is everything gone? Did it drown? Did it vanish? Did it vaporize? And then he sees that there is a banyan tree. And on the banyan tree, in one of the leaves, on one of the leaves, there is a little baby who is sleeping. Not sleeping, he is happily enjoying. So it's a luminous tree and a luminous leaf on which this baby is. So he says, okay, there is somebody out there, maybe I should ask him. And he is a seer. So he just enters into the baby to understand who is this baby. There he finds everything is there. The whole creation is there. Everything that he felt has vanished is inside the baby. So he is surprised. So when he comes out, then he sees there is no creation, there is pralaya. So he understands that the trick is, here is the trickster, the eternal trickster. Shubindu says, God is a little child playing in the eternal's garden. So he wants to embrace the baby. He is so overwhelmed. And as he goes to embrace the baby vanishes and everything that he saw disappeared, appears. He is in his hermitage. Everything, the orientation comes back. So then he understands that this is the Mahamaya. And then the story, this is the background of the story, and this is the sage who actually wrote the Devi Mahatma. Because he has understood what Mahamaya is. And then Lord Vishnu appears. When he understands what Mahamaya is, then he comes and says, now I'll grant you the boon of immortality. So there are two boons that he gets. One is the boon of being free from death, the Yamapasya, and that's he conquers death. But he doesn't get immortality till he understands the play, the Mahamaya. And then the story gets, the first chapter of the Markandeya Puran starts like this, that there are two men. See, these names are so important. So one is Surat and the other is Samadhi. So Surat is a king, as the name implies, a good king. But even in those days, people wear what they wear. This idea that, you know, world was all beautiful at some point of time. So this, he is very unhappy because he sees how his wife, his children and all his, you know, people around, his subjects, his ministers start, because he falls ill, and then he sees that these ministers, how they are conducting the affairs in a very horrible way. They are telling him lies and all kinds of things. So he gets a bit dejected. And he walks into the forest. He just cuts himself off and walks. Now if life was so simple that you walk into the forest and you can cut off, it doesn't work like that. So after some time he starts worrying. Oh my son, he may be squandering the wealth. What will be my wife doing now? What will be my kingdom? There were many people who were good people. I was supposed to look after them. They must be suffering because of my absence. All the typical human worries that today we do. So he is worried. He does not know now what to do. He has come to a hermitage. There is a rishi out there. So, but he is living there. That I'll get, freedom. But freedom doesn't come like that. Because freedom cannot come unless the Divine Mother grants you freedom. That's the secret which Markandeya is going to reveal to us. So he is worried. Then he sees another fellow walk in. I am cutting a long story short. Now, this is the first canto of the 13 canto Devi Mahatmya. Runs in 13 canto. Amazing poetry, beautiful poetry. Maybe in the next part I'll read out some of its poetry. As such Puranas are, if you read the Sanskrit part, it's something so amazing. But especially Markandeya Puran is amazing poetry. I think we hear some of it in as part of the Chandi part. So, then the first canto, this is what is being narrated. So, this other man is a businessman. So, he asks him, why have you come? He says, you know, same problem. He says, my family, my children, all my friends, they all turned out to be cheats, scoundrels. And I am so dejected. So, I have come away to the forest to be away from them. But see, I am still worrying about them. So the king thinks, we are in the same boat. He says, why are you worrying about them? He thinks that he will find the remedy. He says, I don't know why I am worrying. They are not good people. They have deceived me. But I still feel myself responsible toward them. And so he asks, why are you here? He says, same to same. Ditto, copy that. So he says, now this is very interesting that we are away from a situation. We are physically not there. We have left it, but still we are carrying it in our heads. So what to do? They say, let's ask this sage. He sits quietly in meditation, doesn't speak much, but maybe he'll tell us. So they go to speak of the sage. Now this is narrated as part of the Markandeya Puran. So actually it's Markandeya Rishi, but in that you'll have a name of the sage. I've forgotten now the name of the sage. So the sage says, I will tell you a story. So see how Puranas goes, a story within the story. So the first story is simply that the famous image of Lord Vishnu sleeping on his serpent couch. And he is sleeping and out of his navel lotus Brahma has appeared. And there is the primordial waters, cosmic waters. Just a moment for this image when someone, I think it was Sudhir Kumar Sarkar, Monada's father, he asked Sri Aurobindo, are these images real? They long back, before his coming to Pondicherry. Obviously, because revolutionary days. So he asked him, these images, don't they look like mythology, fantastic? Are they real? He says, who told you they are not real? You can see them with your subtle vision. That's documented in one of the books, that you can see them. And Sri Aurobindo again brings up this image in his writings on Ishavasyopanishad, where he describes that, see, this is the unfolding of time. Anantanag or Sheshnag, see both the names. Sheshnag is what? The end of unfolding, and Anant, infinite. So there is no real end. You get an impression that when do we say that what time did time end? Or what time did time begin? It's a question is in a way absurd. We can say that when it began, then time began. But what began? So the names are Seshnag and Anantanag. Seshnag is one of the places. Also Anantanag is one of the places in Kashmir. So people who say that, you know, it's only a recent infested with terrorists. But now, of course, southern Kashmir, now it's being cleared mostly. Anyway, so Anantanag. And it's the time which is unfolding itself on the cosmic waters. And how does it begin? It seems it begins by Vishnu sleeping, and then out of Vishnu emerges from the navel Brahma. So this is the region of vitality. So Brahma is the creator, so he is Rajogun. And Vishnu is the equalizer, so he is Sattugun. And Shiva is the destroyer, so he is the Tamogun. And now this is not Bhagavad, but since we are talking about it, the story remains incomplete. These three gods ask, this is in Devi Puran, where have we come from? What are we supposed to do? And that's when the Divine Mother appears to them. This is not part of the Devi Mahatma, but this is in Devi Puran. So she tells them, what are we supposed to do? So she gives them their assignments, job description. They say, but how are we going to do? We have neither the knowledge nor the power. So the Divine Mother says, I'll give you the knowledge and the power. So to each, the power, the Shakti. So that's why the Divine Mother is also known as Devatma Shakti. She is the power with which the gods operate in the world. But this now, coming back to the story. So Lord Vishnu is sleeping on his couch in his Nidra. It's called as Yoga Nidra. And Brahma is sitting in his own lotus posture, waiting for the word to create. But then out of the ears of Vishnu Bhagwan, there emerge two demons, Madhu and Katab. This is very interesting. Why out of the ears? So you see, it's very, 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 the way even human body is composed. So out of the five senses, you will see that three you can shut, two you cannot shut. The nose and the ears, they are always open. So in one of the story, even you will see that from the nostrils things emerged. And these are the two vulnerable to all kinds of, you know, dirt. So ear is the organ which was created to receive the first vibratory stir, the ether, which is the nad. So nad is the first, the space principle. After that will come aerial principle and touch will be there to receive it. Then will come the fire principle and sight will receive that. Then will come the taste principle, and taste will be the waters, and then will come the smell principle, which is the earth. Now that's again a different subject. So all, each of these is very fascinating, intertwined into each other. So this is the principle through which you receive the cosmic first stir of creation, is to be received by the ear. And right then and there, now who are these fellows? They are not fellows. This is not the story of that moment, first creation. This is the story definitely of after one of the pralayas, there is the creation which is beginning. It was the hour before the gods awake. So Vishnu Bhagwan is sleeping. And naturally Brahma will be fully awake when there is a stir, the word. So when they emerge, they want to kill Brahma. We'll finish off creation before it begins. And then Brahma starts a stuti. He starts praying. To whom does he pray? He prays to the great goddess. Why is he praying to the great goddess? Why doesn't he pray to Vishnu Bhagwan or shout at him or say something? Help, help. Because it is the great goddess by whose will Vishnu Bhagwan has gone into sleep. She has become Yoga Nidra. So that is the original meaning of the word Yoga Nidra. Now of course we start using it all for our asana, and we end it with Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra is literally what Mother has described, literally conscious sleep. It's very rare. Maybe few moments, few days, one can touch it. When the whole consciousness withdraws from, it's a samadhi, but a conscious samadhi, and you touch Sachidanand, the origin. Mother has not used the word Yoga Nidra, because she knows all these words will be corrupted. It's not about doing savasana and, you know, with nice imagery. It's all good. Please do it if that gives us nice, good sleep and refreshing. It does help. But using a term called Yoga Nidra, Yoga Nidra applies to when even Vishnu, who is conscious, he is consciousness, embodiment of consciousness. So this consciousness is completely withdrawn. That's why the asuras of unconsciousness emerge. So they've emerged now. So now consciousness is withdrawn. It has to be brought back. Who can draw her back? None else but the Divine Mother. It's by her will that the whole consciousness is absorbed. And so he prays to her, and that's such a marvelous prayer. What poetry, you know. I mean, I'll need to write it to really recite, because I may lose some words, so I'm not. So anyways, we'll read something else as an alternative. So then she appears. And Brahma says, see what's happened. Without you, nothing can sustain. So she withdraws herself from Vishnu Bhagwan. So Vishnu Bhagwan is up awake, and then the game starts. So he sees these two Daityas, and there is a fight. So you see, that's why we have certain terms in when we talk about Vishnu Sahasranam and you know prayers to Krishna, we say Madhukata Bhari, that you know, because these are the demons he has to finish. But how does he finish now? They are not ordinary fellows, they are from the deepest unconsciousness they have come. So they are, if Vishnu Bhagwan is consciousness, they are complete opposite. So the battle goes on for 5,000 years. And they hold on. So now it's Vishnu Bhagwan's turn to ask Devi what is to be done. So she inspired them and they are filled with arrogance and pride. See? So when Asura is filled with arrogance and pride and he thinks that I am the Lord, the same thing Shrivindu quotes in one of his aphorisms in Shumb and Nishumb. It's the time that he is about to die. So they are filled with pride and arrogance. They said, see, people say you are God. You might have been God in the previous kalpa. But right now, we are the one. You can't beat us. So you can't claim yourself God. So this Devi has moved them. And that same Devi moves Vishnu Bhagwan to ask a boon. It's all her game, staged by her. So Vishnu Bhagwan says, okay, I admit you are almighty. But if you are almighty, can you grant me a boon? Yes. Ask and thou shalt be given. So Vishnu Bhagwan says, well, surely the only boon I want is to kill you both. Now, you know, arrogant people, they can't get back from... He says, okay, they also play smart. You can kill me wherever earth is not covered with water. Now Vishnu Bhagwan sees his field. So he pulls them on his thigh. That's where, you know, the whole thing will start. And then we see that the demons are slain. And they sing the stuti to the great goddess. This is the first canto. Then the story will run. Now from the next canto starts that who is this Devi? Now the sage says, who is this Devi? Who came and withdrew from Lord Vishnu, who had put him to sleep, who could put him to sleep and call him back to life or back to his consciousness. That means she is the one who can, who is at once in unconsciousness as well as in consciousness. She is at once knowledge and ignorance. So you see the difference. So the story will go on. And at the end of all these descriptions, she will ask Surat and these two, that what boon you want. So the king says, I want the boon to go back and look after my subjects and rule them nicely. Surat, she says, granted. So you go back and not only this life, next life also, you will be a wonderful king. And after that also, I am granting you additionally that you will become the next Manu. So you see, he gets promotion because he says, you are a good guy, you are the right person. So you will become the next progenitor of mankind. So he will govern that whole cycle. He asks, what do you want? He is a businessman. So Samadhi, see the names are significant, Samadhi. He says, I, this wonderful game, whatever, I just want to call it quits. He says, okay, I grant you liberation. You see, she is, grants the liberation. She can grant the three worlds and she can grant anything that one may choose. Now, we all do Mahalya and Chandipat. Some people like to do Shurbindo's Durga Stuti. But I have something else which I find very similar to this aspect of the Divine Mother in Savitri, because Savitri is the book of the Divine Mother, and there are two places. I'll just read just the short passage. I also want to read this poem. So one is where Shubindu meets her as the, I mean Ashupati of course, meets her as the World Mother. Actually, there are three places where it comes. One is where he discovered that this entire creation is lit by a single ray of her sun. I'll read only portions. Page number 276, first few lines. But thought nor word can seize eternal truth. The whole world lives in a lonely ray of her sun. In our thinking's close and narrow lamp-lit house, the vanity of our shut mortal mind, dreams that the chains of thought have made her ours. But only we play with our own brilliant bonds. Tying her down, it is ourselves we tie. Whatever is our conception, she will limit herself to that. But she is infinite. In our hypnosis by one luminous point, we see not what small figure of her we hold. We feel not her inspiring boundlessness. We share not her immortal liberty. Thus is it even with the seer and sage. Even the gods, the seer and sage, they cannot understand. They find the play perplexing. So what we should do? Shobindu tells us, out of our thoughts we must leap up to sight. Breathe her divine, illimitable air. Her simple, vast supremacy confess. Dare to surrender to her absolute. Then the unmanifest reflects his form. So what is yet to be born, she is holding that. Seeds of the new creation. Let's put it like that. And only she can reveal if we surrender. She won't reveal to all this mental discussion, debate and oh, this is what new creation will be like, this is what it should be. Nothing. Blank. Or based on the present we try to deduce the future. No. But if we surrender to her, then she may reveal out of her own will, her own choice. So this is much more, of course, because now it is Shurvindo himself, not Rishi Markandeya. But Rishi Markandeya is stuti to the Divine Mother through Brahma. Is something similar when he writes that you are the one and you know all the sages and seers see in your light. Then comes this where she asks these two people, the king and the businessman. Page 295, the world soul, toward the end. What do you want? So, both boons carry their own. One is, if you look at it, one is that the boon to continue in the cycle of creation with the full awareness that the Divine Mother is the charioteer. Surat. So, one is this. I asked somebody today, just passingly. I said, if you have a choice, because someone wrote a letter, oh, this world is horrible, this, that. We'll come to that a little later. So I asked someone that, what do you want? This was not the person who wrote. I said, if you have a choice, one choice is that continue to come again and again, go through the challenges and the difficulties, but then work for the divine, for the great consummation, which Shrivindo has spoken of. We don't know how long it will take. Or get free from all this mila jamila, kasht dukham. So before I could finish, the person says, of course, the first one. This is not choice which you can think about. I remember Chutnaranji is one of the vision where he is walking on a road and there is a place where he can move away and says, this is, you want liberation, you can come here. He paused for a while. He himself narrated me. He says, no, I want transformation. So he said, okay, then go on. And then he reaches a place where there is transformation board. And then he enters into that. So this is what is happening even today. So there is one possibility. Both is she. She can take you through both. If you want to go work for the divine consummation of humanity, the will of God, let's say, fulfill the will of the divine, then there is one path. And the other is where you want to liberate, then that is another path. Both are divine mothers. Now in the story of Markandeya, Markandeya actually chooses to live and fulfill the will of God. Because he knows now that all is God. This is what he has discovered. So, but the choice comes very interestingly. Page 295. Above them all she stands, supporting all, the sole omnipotent goddess, ever veiled, of whom the world is the inscrutable mask. The ages are the footfalls of her tread, their happenings the figure of her thoughts, and all creation is her endless act. His spirit was made a vessel of her force. Mute in the fathomless passion of his will, he outstretched to her his folded hands of prayer. Then comes the choice. Then in a sovereign answer to his heart, a gesture came as a world's thrown away. See, the gesture, you want these, all these worlds are yours. You want to be a king, emperor on all these worlds? Take it, that the Divine Mother can grant. And from a raiment's lustrous mystery raised, one arm half parted the eternal veil. A light appeared still and imperishable. So you want to pass into the light beyond? Granted. But what Ashwapati does is something very beautiful. He just looks at her and is fully attracted. So at the end, what does he do? He cast from the rent stillness of his soul, page 296, a cry of adoration and desire, and the surrender of his boundless mind, and the self-giving of his silent heart. He fell down at her feet, unconscious, prone. Whatever you willest, whatever thou willest, I have no more any will of mine. All is your will. And now comes the last part, where we have the stuti of Brahmaji. Praying to the great goddess, look here, 5,000 years are just passing away, and before that also, creation itself is threatened. Come, mother, come, wake up. But now, the game is much more difficult. Shobindo doesn't want this cycle to continue, once again pralaya. He wants it to change. So what does he do? How does he invoke the Divine Mother? Brahma invokes her to withdraw from Vishnu. Now Vishnu will do the rest. And her role is to inspire from behind. That's why she doesn't directly. She could slay the demon if she wishes. She doesn't. She picks up instruments. She brings out of herself Kaushiki and today's Brahmacharini. All these great goddesses who come and work in the manifestation. But this time, Sri Aurobindo wants the play to reach its culmination. At least cross through the critical stage so that it doesn't collapse back into pralaya and a rebuilding. That's why he starts Savitri from it was the hour before the gods awake. When the, you know, one pralaya is over and now the creation is to begin. So he starts from that. So now he wants to change it entirely, that now mother, this cycle we are. Why she allows it? All that is there. We know. We have read all that in the background of Savitri, Vision and the Moon. That's where we are. Where she says, you know, man is not ready. Man is not ready. If too early I come, man will break down because he's not ready. So he has to go through all this again and again into the furnace. So we become impatient, but not realizing impatience is only going to make things worse. If anything we have to do is to become ready. And how to become ready? Surrender completely. That's the fastest way. That's the whole logic of Sri Aurobindo saying this yoga begins with surrender, proceeds with surrender, ends with surrender. So see here how he invokes. Now he has taken the position of Brahma. But in what way? Now he wants the new word of creation. He is waiting for the new power to manifest and new creation to begin. So page 345. He is voicing our, you know, the person who wrote the letter says, oh, it's been long that we have suffered. Now that answer is a different thing I can give, but that's a little later. Yes, we all have, but this has two answers. When we look at, you know, we should read a little bit of history. 100 years back, when Jallianwala Bagh was happening, when the 1947, what was happening, And if you go just little back, just 300 years back, when was Napoleon? 1795, around that. Just read what used to be happened to the king and queen, were guillotined. Every time I think, I used to feel, my God, what it must be to be below the guillotine, waiting for that, you know, that whole thing to fall down. One of them was, of course, the mother's previous incarnation. One of the incarnations. All that, you know, they were going through, these people so-called who were bringing revolution, they were not only killing, they were putting the head on the top of their spear as a trophy. Cut heads as trophies, displaying it outright the house. If you see these 1700 and means 1800, 1900, 2000, 300 years. Humanity is million years old at least. Now when you see 300 years back this was happening, 100 years back this was happening, now see from 1960 till today, you will feel, oh my God, what happened? That people are now thinking, oh no, we want unity, people shouldn't fight. It's a massive change. Actually, it's so massive that it's unprecedented. It was a way to measure the degree of human suffering of all kinds and see the world before 1960, all kinds of human suffering, and see after 1960 till today. One will wonder that some magic is taking place, but we are always busy looking at a little nose, tip of the nose, my life, this, that. So I told him, look here, your prayer has been much more powerfully conveyed by Sri Aurobindo. And the answer has also been given. Don't start invoking Durga and Kali. Because he was, oh, Mother Kali, come. Kali, Mata cannot change this. That's very clear. Even Kali and Durga push back the demons. She cannot change this state of, she can protect you, guard you. She is the guardian of the individual. But if you want things to change here, or if you want to be absorbed, she can do that. That she can do easily. But be sure what you are wanting. And if you become impatient, restless, basically you are doubting the wisdom that is working. If till now it has not taken place, it's because, obviously because we are not ready. It's so simple. She is full of love, full of wisdom. So as an individual, when we see the world around, first of all, we shouldn't start behaving like a god when we are not. Like, oh, what is happening in Gaza? Oh, what is happening in Ukraine? This kind of sentimentality will not help. If you ask a god, he'll say, dance of Kali is going on. So you will say, what kind of dance? But that's how, if you ask a god, he will say, keep quiet. You don't understand the play, keep quiet. That's all you'll say. So should we not feel? We should feel. But we should then look for the true remedy. The remedy starts from the individual finding the divine within. Without that, you cannot. That's what precisely Markandeya does. All kinds of tapasya. At the end, he wants to understand what is this play. Then he is revealed that it is she whose whole play is this. Then he is ready to help the world. Not otherwise. So if we think by our holy sentiment and, you know, we can look at this strange scenario. On one side, people are crying about the pounding of bombs in, you know, two countries. On the other side, people are protesting against immigration. All kinds of things are happening. So let's understand that we don't understand the play and we cannot intervene unless we are in a cosmic consciousness. And when we are in cosmic consciousness, then we don't have that weak sentimental pity. We act from a higher plane with full compassion. Not shrinking from, not with some holy goodwill. It requires a tremendous power to intervene. Those who are in cosmic consciousness are doing it. But let not man begin to, you know, play a god. It's too dangerous. Gods move in very vast spaces. As you know, Shiva is granting his own child. And he's saying 16 years, he'll be back. You say, what a heartless father. So so he knows. So that's why how we should invoke. Not with restless impatience. Very dangerous to invoke Kali. First she will ask you, let me sort you out before I go to others. So how he invokes the Divine Mother and for what? Brahma's stuti taken to what level? Heavy unchanged ways, still the imperfect world. Shobindu has communicated this prayer, brought the solution. Let's just now align with that. That's the only thing we can do who want to really help the world. All other means are just meaningless, activism, this festival, that debate, discussion. Once you know this is the solution, and he has voiced it so well, better than any of us can do. Heavy unchanged ways till the imperfect world. The splendid youth of time has passed and failed. Heavy and long are the years our labor counts, and still the seals are firm upon man's soul. This is the problem. You create any number of this state, Palestine state, or liberate Ukraine, do anything you want to. Humanity has done these experiments hundreds of times, but if human beings don't change, their soul remains hidden, nothing will happen. They will end up with another pretext, another war, another problem. See the history of the world, you'll see. I mean, it's sometimes a pity. I've spoken about Augustus Caesar. Same thing happened. French Revolution I was speaking about. And French Revolution, what happened at the end of it? Was it a success or was it a failure? They killed the king and queen. And they took over. What was the result after a few years? Napoleon Bonaparte. He's an emperor. He declared himself emperor. And Shobindu says actually it was the arm of God striding through Europe. Because many people didn't understand him. He had his other side. Well, great... tremendous great energy flowing through him. Shobindu said it was Kali moving him. But very few human beings can bear it. And so he says the day he became egoistic and thought, I am France and France is me, Kali slew him. But it was her grace that he was still saved. Thankfully he was not guillotined. He was sent far away. Twice he was caught, twice far away in an island. 6 years he lived there, probably must have done some sadhana, hopefully. Because he was a child of Kali, but he developed that great ego that I am the one. So that story is very... See, within few years, so... Now did... Okay, because Napoleon came, did what happened? He actually ended up, though he became the king, which is what these people wanted to overthrow. But he carried the ideas of freedom, equality, fraternity throughout Europe. Strangely. In his own way, of course, democracy, all that came. And interestingly, those ideas continue to live enshrined in even our Indian constitution. You see the preamble, the first page. What a link of India and France. What are these things? Read it. It's about fraternity, equality and liberty. These are the three ideals. Our own constitution has it. They don't know how to do it. How to do it? Unless human... the seal is broken here, it's not possible. So let's first start by breaking open our own seal. But who will do it? The Divine Mother. And where is the ancient mother's heart, earth's heart? O truth, now you see. O truth defended in thy secret son. He is not calling her back from that state of unconsciousness. He is calling the unmanifest. Not the cycles are going on and the Divine Mother's play, then she goes, the Cosmic Mother, World Mother, no. He is now invoking the Transcendent Mother because that's the vision in Canto 2. O Truth, defended in thy secret Son, voice of a mighty musings in shut heavens on things withdrawn within her luminous depths. O wisdom, splendor, mother of the universe, creatrix, the eternal's artist bride, linger not long with thy transmuting hand, pressed vainly on one golden bar of time. See, he's wanting the whole change of the manvantara cycle. As if time dare not open its heart to God. O radiant fountain of the world's delight, world free and unattainable above, O bliss who ever dwellest deep hid within, While men seek the outside and never find mystery and muse with hieratic tongue, incarnate the white passion of thy force, mission to earth one living form of thee. One moment filled with thy eternity, let thy infinity in one body live, all knowledge wrap one mind in sea of light, all love throb, all love throb single in one human heart. Immortal treading the earth with mortal feet, all heaven's beauty crowd in earthly limbs, omnipotence girdled with the power of God, movements and moments of mortal will pack with the eternal might one human hour, and with one gesture change all future time. Let a great word be spoken from the heights, and one great act unlock the doors of fate. Those who want to now look at the canto on the birth of Durga, how she is described, here read the very next passage when the Divine Mother says, I am going to come. It's not just about, you know, that it's not just Sri Aurobindo lifting that idea to its ultimate potential. What is the ultimate possibility if the Divine Mother has come? To ask her only to slay Madhu and Katab is a little gain. To forever be free this world of all future Madhu and Katab. Because that Durga Saptashati very clearly doesn't say. It says that in the next Shumbanishum will come again. As Hitler and Mussolini, God knows, they'll come again. Now that's not a very good thing, no? So Sri Aurobindo now gives us the final solution. So those of us, sometimes I feel that, you know, we who are open to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, who are aware of this, you know, we still go back to the old ways. Nothing, I mean, to each his own. But what they have brought is not just an aspect of the goddess, but the goddess herself, and embodied it as the Divine Mother. And all that we need to do, we who feel the pain of earth, we should not be insensitive. I feel not only about, it's not about gardens and this humanity. What a miserable state. Children who are busy with their selfies, they're not suffering otherwise. But if you look at their life, it's, you just feel like, oh, this is, I mean, almost like dogs and cats, if you ask me. It's great suffering to see, you know. They're young, they have so much potential, they can do so much, you know. But life is being spent in posing and all this. Again, nothing wrong. It's not about morality, far from it. But what a waste of the youthful energies that are given to man, spent only on, you know, just amassing money and... So that is more miserable. I find that in many ways more miserable than you want to create a, you know, nations which are fighting. So let me close with, I'll not explain, but I just want to read. As I said, Sri Aurobindo's association with Sage Markande. So there is a poem called, O Will of God. So this is the poem. In which Sri Aurobindo, now will of God is what? That's the, you know, will of the Supreme is the Mahashakti, the Divine Mother. She is the will and knowledge of the Supreme. O will of God that stirrest and the void is peopled. Everything fills up, creation begins. Force, abode, upon whose wings the stars borne round and round need not 1 hour of rest, at whose behest the stars and galaxies and constellations, the sun and earth and moon and all of them are moving. By whose power they are driven? By that power. Light, form and sound are masks of the eternal movement. We see what thou choosest, But it is thou we see. Now he is giving us the secret. Now Markandeya's experience comes into the play. That's his experience. That all is the Divine Mother. She is the one. Mahamaya, he wants to know. The moment he realizes what Mahamaya is, he discovers she is the bondage and she is the freedom. You cannot get free without her grace. You may struggle, you may detach, you may go to mountain, anywhere. You may shut your eyes, you may put cotton buds in the ear. Nothing will happen until she wills. So to surrender to her will is the path. That's why, O will of God. I, Markandeya. Now Shobindu writes, I, Markandeya. He is obviously identified with the author of Chandipat. And you see, all the four great goddesses come here. Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. We have not even spoken about that. So he is saying, I, Markandeya, whom the worlds release. He is already released from the bounds. This seer. But what does the seer discover? But it is God alone that sees. Soar up above the bonds that hold below. So he's rising above the cosmic waters, the floods. All this is happening below and he is above them. Man to his littleness lost in the show. If such is going to be life, 100 pralayas, we don't want anymore. But you try to, you know, we are still what do we say? Tinkering, denting, painting. Car engine is the same. Man to his littleness, lost in the show, perennial. So it's a cyclic event, which the senses round him build. So in the Markandeya Puran it comes. Toward the end, the Rishi says, she is the one who creates the delusion, she is the one who frees you from delusion. In knowledge and ignorance they have spoken and met. And this is a purpose. It's not just a whimsical thing. Step by step she takes you. Blinding the eyes and slowly opening the eyes. Otherwise that's how the seed will grow into the divinity. I find them out. Again she is identified with the Rishi of the Devi Puran. I find them out and am no more beguiled. Now he realizes all this is tomar karma, tumi karoma, your play. You are the doer, you are the seer. But ere I rise, ere I become the vast. This I is Markandeya, the author is Shobindu. So you see the identification. And luminous, infinite, and from the past and future, utterly released. Forget. These beings who themselves their bonds create under her will. All is happening under her will. Once I will speak and what I see declare. The rest is God. There is silence everywhere. My eyes within were opened and I saw. I have a very strong feeling. Given the, you know, the four great goddesses Shobindu describes. Of course, he doesn't describe the Divine Mother beyond. That's left for Shobindu. And he speaks of identification with Markandeya. He discovers that great work of Mahamaya. And he speaks in first person as I. I have a very strong feeling that it is Shobindu himself who in some past was Markandeya. Nowhere else, nobody has mentioned. So, I take full responsibility. There is no reference anywhere. But there are enough reason to know. And as I said, this poem is almost autobiographical. And it also points, if we really want to help the world, if we really care for the world, if we really care, then we should stop fretting, fuming, complaining, whining and groaning. We should discover the cause. Like Markandeya, what is the cause? And then what do you discover? It's the mother who is the bondage and the freedom. And then what is the next thing to be done? Can we start jumping like a small baby and say, why have you done this? Oh, this, that. No. We should just say, take us entirely. Do with us what your will is. Do with the word what your will is. Surely you know much better than the whole creation. Shubhinda at one place says, if only you people knew that myself and the mother know a little more than you, it would be so much better. And to surrender to her entirely, completely, and pray that let thy will be done, let thy will be done, let thy will be done. This is our Devi Mahatma. So upgraded. Sri Aurobindo has upgraded essays on the Gita. Upgraded. Sri Aurobindo, through the secret of the Vedas, has upgraded the Vedas. Because, you know, he directly mentions integrals, supramentals, number of places. Sri Aurobindo has upgraded the Isha Upanishad, one of the principles, through Ishavasya Upanishad. So he, one of the tasks of the avatar is Vedanudharte, to rescue the secret knowledge. And here we see Sri Aurobindo has upgraded the Devi Puran, which is so dear and sacred. It is the one Puran which links the Vedanta and the Tantra. It is a text sacred to all the Tantric traditions, regarded as the most powerful text. At the same time, the stories of Narayan, Hari, Vishnu, he is himself a devotee of Shiva. So he upgrades it to an entirely new level, because that's what Sri Aurobindo is. And so much more than our tongue can utter. Jai Ma.